Let your body and mind just simply relax. See if you can invoke that inner friend, that attitude of gratitude and care and respect and appreciation, that type of an attitude. And let the mind and body bask. In the presence of that love. And see if your body can relax to such a degree that you can barely feel the outline of the body. Just let the body, all of the muscles, relax into space. Become especially aware of wherever the muscles attach to the joints, and let those areas suggest that those areas relax. Just simply let go. And just let your mind run through the body with an attitude of gratitude and acceptance. And let that the presence of that feeling, let the presence of that feeling relax the body. And just feel the body relaxing out in the space. Be grateful to your mind for its intelligence and all of the service it does for you. And give the mind a chance to just simply relax and do whatever it wants to do. In the presence of someone who appreciates it. Now just let your own presence totally fill and relax into the totality of your experience. Not rejecting anything, just simply letting yourself be. Letting yourself feel your experience. And letting your experience be totally present to yourself. And just notice your own presence. It's not as though the mind is lighting up your being. Your being doesn't need anything to light it up. But your mind can comment. It can enjoy the recognition of my being, the changelessness, the ananda, the nature. Getting used to just recognizing my own nature. Om Patram Karane Vishrinuyama Devaha Patram Pashe Makshapir Yajatraha Stirai Rangai Istrishtuvagum Sastanubihi Yashena Deva Hitanyadayuhu Swastina Indro Vrittashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Sarksho Arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We're on verse 8, okay? The Manomaha. Manomaya prana sharira netha pratishtito me hridayam sannidhaya pratishtito me hridayam sannidhaya tadvijnanena paripashyanti dhiraha tadvijnanena paripashyanti dhiraha anandarupam I've got a typo here. Anandarupamritam yadvipati. Anandarupamritam yadvipati. Manumayaha prana sharira neta. Pratishtitaha anne hridayam sannidhaya. Tat Vijnanena paripashyanti dhiraha ananda rupa amritam tadvipati. Let me see your book for a minute. Let me see your book for a minute. Okay, I'm going to read this differently. I like this one better. Anandarupam amritam. Anandarupam amritam. If the other is okay, also this is better. Anandarupam Amritam Yet Bibhanti. Okay, that's what you have in your book, and that's the best. Okay. Okay, so now, these two verses taken together, it's a really beautiful Mahavakya. So, going back, I'm going to go back to the previous verse. Yaha Sarvajnaha Sarvavit. That one who is Sarvajnaha, the one who recognizes the whole as Brahman. So, from the standpoint of Ishvara, Ishvara, Lord, is the one who is Sarvajnaha Sarvavit. So, here is this entire manifest creation. This entire manifest creation is nothing but consciousness. It's like the ocean recognizing all is water. That's Sarvajnaha, where you know the essential being, the essential nature of all that is, to be yourself. So the Aham Sarvajnaha, you know, I am the conscious being, which is the truth of all of this. That Sarvajnatvam, Sarva means all, Nyaha means the one who knows everything, so omniscient. But this omniscience, Sarvajnaha, is juxtaposed against this other word, Sarvavit. Sarvavit also means omniscient. So you have Sarvajnaha, Sarvavit. So therefore, two different things are being meant here. So Ishvara is Sarvajnaha, recognizing this is all my being. But also Sarvavit, which means the particulars of all that are there. The particular knowledge of the entire manifest creation, that also is known. So now, to understand, so now this is, it's really revealing the nature of the whole. The nature of Ishvara, the nature of Brahman plus the manifest creation. So to really understand Sarvajna and Sarvavit in terms of your own experience, you can understand it in relationship to your own mind. If you have a thought modification, say of a meadow, the recognition that the very being, the Sat-Chit Ananda, the very being of that thought modification is myself. I am the truth of it. The existence that it enjoys is my being, is me. The knownness that it enjoys is the Chit, that is me. I am the Ananda, I am the limitlessness, the very freedom, the very wholeness, the limitless consciousness, which is the very being from which this expresses. That's the Ananda. So your Sarvajnatvam there, you have Sarvajnatvam there, where in the recognition I am the self of the whole. The Sarvavit is that every part of that maya, of the thought, of the vritti, is known. Right? If I ask you to have a thought of a meadow, the meadow is known. If I ask you to have a thought of a beach scene, that thought is known. All of the details are known. So the Sarvajnaha is the general, I am the whole, and the Sarvavit is the details. Now, for Ishvara, this is Ishvara, in the Sarvavit includes the entire manifest creation, everything that exists within duality. Within the time-space duality. The whole creation itself is a manifest of knowledge. And that knowledge, that manifestation, is known. That's the Sarvavit. Okay. Now, all of you, me, everything that exists within duality, is part of that manifestation. Right? This body is part of the manifestation. The mind is part of the manifestation. Sense organs are part of the manifestation. Because these sense organs are not your personal projection, right? So they're part, they belong to the creation. And so if they belong to the creation, they're within objective reality. And all of them, all of it is part and parcel of Ishvara. So now from the perspective of Ishvara, Ishvara knows, I am the whole, not in words, but just in the reality. There's not some little man there saying, I am the whole. But just as if you were to have a thought, you have a thought, you recognize yourself as the being, the Sat-Chit Ananda of the thought, and the content of the thought is known. Creation, the entire creation is Ishvara. It is known, the Sat-Chit Ananda is known, and the content of that manifest knowledge is known, of which all of you are a part. Now, going back to your own vritti, your being as the self of the thought is known, and the content is known. Right? Your Ishwara in reference to the thought. Right? It's a good example of understanding Ishwara just in reference to that one vritti. Right? Now, within that vritti, vritti means thought modification, within that thought modification, say there is a character. I ask you to have a vision of a meadow and there's people walking in the meadow. So there's characters in the meadow. The characters are looking at the meadow and enjoying what they're seeing. They're looking at the meadow through their sense organs, right? And so they can only see as far as their sense organs can see, right? In other words, if there's trees blocking one side of the meadow, they're coming up and here's a grove of trees, and there's a group of deer on the other side of the grove, and these people are on this side of the grove, they can't see through the grove to see the deer. But Ishwara can see the people on this side, the grove, and the deer on this side. So the individuals are limited in terms of their knowledge. You see that? They have to be, because their sense organs are limited and the mind is limited. So they are not capable ever, whether they have knowledge or not, whether they have self-knowledge or not, they can't be sarvavit like Ishwara. Because as long as this upadhi is there, the conditioning adjunct is there, the mind, the sense organs, and body enjoy the limitations that they enjoy. My mind is a limited mind. My sense organs are limited mind. It always will be, whether I have self-knowledge or not. Okay. So there's going to, even if you're a Jivan Mukta, one who's living liberated, you will have, the Ishwara will be sarvavit, you won't be. You'll be alpavit. You have little tiny bit of knowledge. Ishwara has infinite knowledge of whatever the manifestation is. But both you and Ishwara will be, if you have knowledge, sarvajna. You will recognize that my being is the being of the whole. And that the experience is not different. Because there is no time or space in terms of the Atma. So yourself is not a littler self than Ishwara's self. Atma is not small and Brahman big. Atma, the self, is Brahman. And that self is the self of whatever the manifestation is. So this is interesting to just play within your own mind, just so that you can understand the truth of it experientially. If your being, just the conscious being, the Atma, yourself, you have a imagination. Say I ask you to have an imagination just to focus on a plate with an apple on it. That's your imagination. You just focus on a plate that has an apple on it. Okay? Now the vritti that you're having, which is going to be constricted now, to a plate with an apple. Okay? That's a pretty small little vritti. Because it's a little plate, not a little apple. Okay? So now, the Atma consciousness, right, pervades the apple with the plate, the apple on the plate vritti. Okay? Now I ask you to have an imagination of a meadow with the night sky. A meadow with the night sky, with the moon and all of the stars. That's a big vritti. Okay? That's a big vritti. Okay? Or I ask you to look at a plate and then look at the sky. Whatever the size of the vritti is totally irrelevant to the size of your being. Consciousness doesn't become big or small. Right? Consciousness is consciousness. It's not an object to have a size within the creation. And so whether consciousness is the conscious being from which the entire creation manifests, or is the consciousness which is the consciousness of every part of the entire manifestation, is totally irrelevant to consciousness. Because consciousness doesn't have a right side or a left side. It's not like, oh, okay, the creation, the infinite creation manifests, and now this much consciousness is being used. Right? But in the little jiva, only this much consciousness is being used. Then you're looking at consciousness as something that has space, rather than something from which space manifests. It's important. If you have an imagination or a dream, for instance, the space is manifest in the dream. The space itself, the space and the time, are manifest in the dream. They're manifest in the imagination. They belong to duality. They don't belong to Atma. Right? Space belongs to the creation, not to the Atma. If space doesn't belong to the Atma, then there isn't a big self or a little self. See what I mean? There's not a right side or a left side. There's not an up or a down. There's just simply limitless being. And why do they say limitless being? Because there's no borders. Limitless being doesn't... We tend to take that as spatial. Limitless being means like space. It's infinite extension. No, it has nothing to do with being spatial. It has to do with there being nothing else. Nothing else means what? If I have a thought, right, I am the self of that thought. Means, here we're going to get to the wave ocean. If I have a thought, I am the self, the conscious being of the thought. The thought has no other substance, right? If I take the conscious being away from the thought is not there. It's like if I use the clay pot example, if I take the clay out of the pot's not there because the clay is its substance. Now let's look at this. If I have a thought, what is the substance of the thought? What fills it? What is its being? Well, the existence belongs to who? The existence of the thought belongs to who? Me. The thought comes and goes, the existence remains. The knownness of the thought belongs to who? Me. The thought comes and goes, the knownness remains. Remains to be present to whatever else whatever the next thought is. Okay? So the sat-chit, the very being of the thought is the self of the thought. Right? The difference is, the distinction is this. The thought comes and goes, I don't. The self doesn't. Right? But the thought can't have any existence apart from me. I have existence apart from it. Right? Because the thoughts come and go and I don't. But it has no existence apart from me. So now if you really look at what that means in terms of Ishvara, you know, space has no existence apart from me. Because I am the existence. Right? But my existence is not dependent on space. Space cannot be known apart from me. Right? But my knownness has nothing to do with space. So I'm the self of the space. Space isn't the self of me. Right? I'm the self of the space. I'm the one from whom the space comes, who sustains the space, and into whom the space goes. So what space am I? I'm free from space. If I'm free from space, if space has nothing to do with me, then whatever the size of the vritti, or the manifestation of knowledge that comes, is irrelevant to me because I don't have any borders. So say I have a big manifestation of the infinite creation. What is the self of that big manifestation? Me. Say I have a little manifestation, an individual vritti, for instance, within the whole. There's an individual vritti, my thought. Right? There's a thought within the total. What size is the self? It's an absolutely irrelevant question. consciousness doesn't have a size. Now, when you think of your own self, say when we're doing a meditation, you're thinking, just me, your own being. This very personal, your own presence, when you think, I am, I exist. The word, how big am I? How tall? How wide? What color am I? Am I black or white or red or yellow or blue? What color am I? Am I a man or a woman? All, none of these apply. The question is inappropriate because your being doesn't fit into this form of duality of name and form. So what is appropriate to you to describe yourself? It's just when you say me or I am, the being that those words land on. All we need to do is differentiate my own being, which is the very self of all of these experiences. We need to differentiate this self from all of the experiences, not to say that the experiences over there are over here and the self is over here. It's only in this way. This is the differentiation. The conscious presence that I am, right, never changes. Nothing displaces me. Nothing can make me change in nature, change in form, move in any way. I cannot be displaced. That is how I make this differentiation. When we say subject-object, when we do the Drikdrisha Viveka, to differentiate these objects that can be objectified, it's not that the object is over there and I'm over here. That differentiation is the recognition to help me continually recognize that the conscious being that I am is not objectifiable. Consciousness, yourself, which is the very subject of all of your experience, the me, is not objectifiable so that I can look at me and describe me as an object within the creation. I am the constant, non-objectifiable presence. You know what I mean by objectifiable? I mean it's been very simple. Subject-object relationship where I can illumine something, describe it, it exists within time and space, it can be differentiated from something else. And so because I can describe it and I can differentiate it one thing from another, it's got a name and form, right? Then because that's objectified, that isn't going to be me. But I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it. But now if we take it even... But then if we look at what we're looking at, is what we're looking at, the object that we're looking at, whether it be my body or my sense organs or my mind, is what I'm looking at separate from awareness? Can it be known apart from awareness? And that's the critical step we have to recognize, that the conscious being that I am is the very being which all of these experiences depend upon. Just like to the same degree that the pot depends on the clay. All of this is me. It totally depends upon me. How to recognize that? Well, I'm the only thing here that doesn't change. No matter what experiences come and go, I am the one who remains as the constant, the non-objectifiable constant. I'm the very being of all experiences that I have. So here, in starting with this verse, he says, that one, Ishwara, the Lord, is sarvajñaha sarvavit. The one who recognizes I am the whole and who knows every part of the whole. For Ishwara, this entire manifest creation is his glory. It is a manifestation of knowledge. And that is his glory. That's the second line. This yesya esha mahima tuhi. This entire, all of this in the creation, the entire order of the creation, that is his glory. Then he says, divye brahmapure hi eshaha. And it's this Ishwara, this Brahman, the Atma, for whom this is the entire, this is a manifestation of knowledge, this whole creation. It is this one who was here in the city of Brahma, in the city of Brahman, which is consciousness. May you know that Atma, Atma Pratishtitaha, may you know that self to be abiding here in this space here, which is the city of Brahman, which is Divya, which is consciousness. What does that mean? The city of Brahman is where Brahman lives. What does that mean? If you want to find Brahman, if you want to find Brahman, you have to go to where he lives. Now, where are you going to go? My sense organs can look for Brahman out here. I can, you know, I could go to Berkeley, I could go to San Francisco. I could go here, I could go there, looking for Brahman. Am I going to find Brahman there? Well, it's interesting. This is the problem. What you will find as you search in these cities in the world, what you will find are names and forms. You will find names and forms. Because that's what the sense organs are capable of giving you. And so if your mind is searching for Brahman in the world, it's going to be at a loss. Because all it's capable of finding are the forms. It can't find in the world the substance of the forms. Because your eyes can't see that. Your ears can hear sound. That's what they can do. Your eyes can see form. That's what they can do. Your eyes can't see Brahman. Right? The eyes can't see Brahman. They can see form. But then how is Brahman going to be recognized? Right? Well, in the city of Brahman. You have to go to the city of Brahman, where the consciousness is. Where is the consciousness to be found? In this body here. In the buddhi. How is it that the consciousness is found in the buddhi? What do they mean? Well, now let's look at it. My sense organs can see forms, right? They can see this physical body. And so the sense organs themselves are not going to be able to find Brahman. They can just find the names and forms. Right? But the buddhi, right, the mind, right, enjoys consciousness. It is the mind, in fact, that is suffering from the ignorance that causes the mind itself that says, I am the conscious being. I am the conscious being. What does that mean? That the buddhi itself has access to consciousness. By access to consciousness, I mean, the sense organs don't have access to consciousness. They have, because of that, with their sense objects that they're related to are sense organs. All right, so what do I mean by they don't have access to consciousness? You can all say the sense organs are conscious. Sense organs are conscious. Yeah, but can they see consciousness? Can they see consciousness? Yeah, they can only see form. They're conscious, but can they see consciousness? No. You know? Okay, then we've got the mind. Can the mind see consciousness? How is it going to see consciousness? How can the mind see consciousness? Well, it can't. It can't see consciousness. Why? Because consciousness is not an object. Can it think of consciousness? Like, for instance, is consciousness, what I mean by that, yes, of course it can think about consciousness, but can it think consciousness into being? Can it find consciousness on a mental level? Can the mind find consciousness on a mental level? Like, why, by that I mean, can it travel to somewhere in the creation on a subtle plane to find some consciousness? The sense organs can travel on a physical plane. If the sense organs can travel on a physical plane, moving through all of the sense objects, can the sense organs travel and find some consciousness? No, because consciousness is not an object for the sense organs to find. All right, on a subtle plane, can the mind travel into subtle realms, into imaginative realms, into meditative realms, to find some consciousness? Can it do that? Say no, it can't. Why? Well, one clue is that the mind already says, it already says, I am the consciousness. I am the conscious being. The mind already says this. Right? So, if the mind already says this, I am the conscious being, how can it travel to find some consciousness? Say the mind that already says, I am the conscious being, it travels through multi-dimensions in the creation, the multi-dimensional creation, trying to find some consciousness. Or the mind that already says, I am consciousness, it tries to have a meditative experience so that it can experience consciousness. The mind that already says, I am the conscious being, now has a meditative experience, works to have that, so that now it can say, I have now found the consciousness. The mind that is the consciousness has now found the consciousness. Something wrong. So now what does this mean? It is the mind that says, I am the conscious being, that has the consciousness available to it. The problem is that the consciousness, when the mind says, I am the conscious being, that is where Brahman is living. That is where Brahman is living. The problem is that the mind says, I am the conscious being, which is the ignorance of the mind. The mind needs to recognize that when it says, I am the conscious being, there has to be a little shift there. It's a very subtle little shift. It's like night and day, but this is the shift. It has to recognize that the consciousness which is itself, right, is free of the mind. That the consciousness which is itself, when it says, I am the conscious being, that very consciousness, which is me, is changeless. That the thoughts all come and go, that's the Maya, the thoughts all come and go and come and go and come and go and come and go, the moods come and go and come and go and come and go, making the consciousness appear to change from the standpoint of the mind. From the standpoint of the mind, it appears to change because the mind that says, I am the conscious being, then also says, I am unhappy. And I, the conscious being, am unhappy. I, the conscious being, am happy. I, the conscious being, am agitated. I, the conscious being, am seeing the beautiful sky. So whatever the vritti is there, the mind says, you know, I am that. I am experiencing that. I am the mind. So it has not, even though that's the Brahmaputi, you know, that's the city of Brahman. The mind can never, the mind is never away from that conscious being, but the ajnanam, the ignorance on the part of the mind, causes it to take itself to be that. That's the mistake. The consciousness, when the mind says, I am the conscious being, who it's referring to as me, that is Brahman. There's no other Brahman. There's no other conscious being. There's no place to go. That is it. The problem is that consciousness is taken to belong to the mind by the mind. That's the whole problem. So he says, it's that Atma, right? That Atma that is abiding in this space, in the city of Brahman, which is consciousness. It's that very self, which is Sarvavit and Sarvajnaha, from the standpoint of the whole manifest creation. Now, in this next verse, it moves into, so that's what we were doing last week. Now, in the next verse, it moves into the jiva. The jiva, coming now back to the jiva, because it went to Ishvara as the whole manifest creation. This jiva, this individual, is part of that manifest creation. You're not, you as a jiva, body, mind, sense organs, you're part of Ishvara. Right? You're not separate. Just like the wave is part of the ocean, the individual is part of the whole. This is the problem there. This is how there can be misunderstanding. Everything about you as a jiva, body, mind, sense organs, you are part and parcel of the whole. Right? So you can say, being part of the whole, being you as part of the whole, you're both part of the whole and you're separate also. Example, Swamiji and his Bhasha, if you read that, you would have come across this. Imagine a tree. A tree is one entity. Right? The tree is one entity. But the tree has branches and leaves. So it's both non-dual in that there's one tree there. And it's dual because there's branches and leaves and a trunk. So like that, you can think, here is one creation, Ishvara. It's one, non-dual. Because only one, not two. It's only one creation, one manifestation. But it's dual. Because you're there, and you're there, and you're there, and you're there. So it's one manifest creation with many, many parts. That's how that can be understood. And then, if that understood, then you need to have an experience of something anyway. That's not Vedanta. What Vedanta is that the you, the self that you are, is the self. The self that you are is the self of the whole. And that the relationship that the whole has to the self is itself non-dual. In terms of satyam nitya, in terms of clay pot, in terms of what we use an example sometimes of this bas relief. Bas relief is like a clay sculpture where intricate scene is sculpted into like a block of clay. This is very common in India. So you have a big block of clay and an intricate scene is sculpted into that block of clay. Right? You could say, if you look at that intricate scene of many characters in conversation with each other, you know, there's one block of clay, but there are many characters. There's one block of clay, but there's many characters. Would you say that? Do the characters, all of the characters and all of the activities in the block of clay, have a separate reality from the clay? Like you could take the block, you could take the whole sculptural scene, the whole sculptured scene in the clay, you know, complex scene of characters talking to each other and people carrying water and this and that, you know, a very complex scene. And you can say, well, there is one whole scene here, and in that one scene, there are many parts, there are many people, there are many activities going on in that scene. You say, yes, that's true. There's a whole scene, and that scene has many parts. True. What is the truth of that scene, though? One clay or two clays? That's where the Advaita comes in. That's where the Advaita. Because there's nothing there but clay. Here, it's even more profound, because here, you have the entire creation, and there's nothing there but consciousness. Whose consciousness? Ishvara's consciousness or my consciousness? Well, if you say Ishvara's consciousness, how is Ishvara's consciousness different from my consciousness? Unless you're looking at consciousness as something which is spatial. If you look at consciousness as that from which the whole manifestation has come, it's not spatial. And then Ishvara's consciousness is my consciousness. In fact, there is only consciousness. When we say there is only consciousness, what is that experience of consciousness? Can you look at it? Can you look at that experience of consciousness? You can't look at it. How do you know it's there then? Because you are it. You are it. You're self-evident. Nobody's illumining consciousness. It is its own experience. It's self-evident. It's the self-evident me. And that self-evident me is the one thing that never, the one and only thing that never changes. That's how it can be recognized. So here he says, Manomayaha, this Atma is Manomayaha. It's the one abiding in the mind. It's the one that has this mind. What does it say, Manomayaha? Because the Brahmapuri, right? Whatever the thought in the mind, right? That thought enjoys consciousness. Consciousness doesn't come and go. So recognize the conscious being in the mind. Every vritti, every thought that you have, enjoys that consciousness. The thing that you have to recognize is that the consciousness doesn't change. The me doesn't change, the vritti changes. So notice that Atma, Manomayaha, the one that has the mind as the upadi. The one that leaves the prana sharira neta, prana sharira neta, the one who leaves the subtle body. Prana sharira here stands for the subtle body. The one who leaves the subtle body, what does that mean? The subtle body goes from body to body to body to body. Wherever the subtle body goes, when this physical body drops and the subtle body travels to take another body, wherever the subtle body goes, consciousness is there. Wherever the subtle body goes, Brahman is there, the Atma is there. The Atma, the subtle body can never be away from the Atma. So the Atma leads the subtle body, right? It is the conscious being, because the Atma is the conscious being. And the subtle body can never be away from the conscious being. So wherever the Atma, wherever the subtle body goes, the Atma is there. It leads it. It leads it from whose experience? Only from the experience of the upadi, like this. If I take a pot and I move the pot from A to B, right? The space is leading the pot. Because wherever the pot goes, if we've got the pot space, I'm moving the pot from A to B. Right? The space leads the pot. Right? Because wherever the pot goes, the space is there. Right? The pot can never get away from the space. Like that, the subtle body, when this physical body drops, wherever the subtle body goes, I am there. It can never be without me. Because the sattva of the subtle body will always reflect the consciousness. And there is nothing but consciousness. So wherever the sattva is, wherever the mind is, I am there. Because there's no place where I'm not. Right? And so wherever the subtle body goes, the Atma is there. Pratishtitaha anne hridayam sannitaya. I am placed as the very adhishtana, as the very basis. I am placed in the hridaya, in the heart, which is abiding here in the annam, annamaya kosha, in the body. So it says, pratishtitaha anne, being placed here in the body, means what? Anna means annamaya kosha. Placed here in the body, in the hridaya, in the buddhi, right? The buddhi in the heart. Because the buddhi is located from the sthana, from the point of view of the physical body. We say that the buddhi is located here. And here is where I am, where the Atma abides. Just from the standpoint of the upadhi. Then he says, tad vijnanena paripashyanti dhiraha. The ones who have recognized this, tad vijnanena, the ones who have the direct, immediate knowledge of this through the teaching of the teacher and the shastra, that vijnana stands for the sampradaya, this teaching tradition, for the one who has recognized that, paripashyanti dhiraha, those dhiras, those wise people who have the viveka, they recognize all this clearly. Paripashyanti means they see this completely from all angles. How? Through the tadvijnanena, through the teaching of the teacher and the Upanishads and the Shastra. So tadvijnanena paripashyanti dhiraha. Then what? For them, anandarupam amritam yadvibhati. For them, for those who know, who have recognized this, for them, the Atma, which is anandarupam, whose being is limitless. Ananda means the recognition of not the coming and going of ananda in one's experience. Ananda, bliss comes and goes, happiness comes and goes. That's not the ananda. The ananda is the recognition of the limitless nature of my being, which is the most desirable. That this self that I am is not going anywhere. It's not something that can be modified. It's something that is limitless and whole and complete. That's what we mean by ananda rupam. My nature is ananda. It's not something that can be improved upon. And it is amritam, free from death. That this self, that is me, that is most dear to me, that I've taken to be this physical body and mind, all subject to death and change, I recognize that no, this self is the ananda rupam. This self is itself absolutely whole and complete, and amritam, free from death. Mrita means that which dies. Amritam means immortal, that which is free from death. So the one who has seen, and when they say seen, has known. Vijnana, jnana means knowledge. Vishesh, it's a vishishta, it's a particular type of knowledge. This is the knowledge that is revealed through the sampradaya, through the handling of the Upanishads as a pramana, from that guru-sisha teaching tradition, so that the mind is able to recognize, to differentiate the changeless being. It's able to differentiate its own self, which is satyam, from its own mitya, right? It's able to differentiate the satyam from the mitya of myself. It's able to differentiate the satyam and mitya of myself. What that means is I'm able to recognize the satyam, which never changes, the being which never changes, from the mitya, all of the experiences which are dependent upon it and which do change. Okay. It's very... To understand the satyam mitya is essential here, because there is no distance between you and your body, between you and the mind, between you and your sense organs, between you and the creation. So it's not about... separation, it's about recognition of satyam and mitya. Right? And you have to do that initially through a separation, but it's not a spatial separation. It's the recognition of right here and now, what about me is not an object that comes and goes. What about me is changeless. In my experience, what is changeless? And then if you recognize that what is changeless is my experience is not objectifiable. Once you say that it cannot, I am here and I cannot be made into an object. What that does, that simple fact, what that does is then make everything else Ishvara. Everything else part of the total manifestation. Because this body is objectifiable. The sense organs are objectifiable. My thoughts, my moods, emotions are objectifiable. That means they enjoy the same order of reality and part and parcel of the creation. Not of me. And so then there's one self, one non-objectifiable self, and one manifestation, of which this body, mind, sense organs are a part. You see that? That's the satyam mitya. As soon as that satyam mitya becomes clear,
then this body, mind, sense organs belong to the Maya, belong to the mithya, because they're objectifiable and they're subject to change. There's a huge difference between consciousness that can't be an object in the creation and everything else. When I cannot be an object in the creation, then I am of a different order of reality than all of the nama-rupas, all of the names and forms in the creation, of which this body, mind, sense organs are a part. And then what do I have to recognize? That the body, mind, sense organs, my thoughts, my moods, my emotions, all of my perceptions, all of them, none of them, are away from consciousness. It's not just that this mind is not away from consciousness. I have no experience at all away from consciousness. I am the very being of all experience. And it doesn't stop at just this body. So, he goes on. We'll stop here then. Let's take a minute. Purnamidah Purnamidah Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.